Hello everyone, and welcome to minute 53 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having me, as always.
Yes, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, especially when I can listen to your music and then listen to you talk.
Excellent.
Minute 53 begins with Patron having a question and ends with Blue starting to get a little firm with Gray. So we ended things yesterday with both Rico and Garber trying to figure out what's going on, what's holding things up. And Rico begins this minute by saying, "Hey, I wonder what that cop's thinking about now." And then Garber goes, "What cop?" And he goes, "The one who's a hostage. I'm glad it's not me." And then he goes, "Where the hell's that money?" So, first of all, I like the way that they're basically also reminding us that there's a cop on the train.
Yeah,
through this little just a way of him, you know, pointing this little thing out.
I always find it a slightly strange, not a strange element of the film, but I always find it odd. They don't make a huge deal out of it until he does play more of a role towards the end. But it's only, as you say, just the odd little line here and there that it's kind of hinted at. It's odd. You kind of almost expect that to be a bigger deal and kind of spend more time, because you don't really know, you don't, the audience don't know who it is, do you, until later on?
No, you find out.
Yeah, it's quite surprising. You almost feel like you'd expect him to be one of the main guys, be like the here save the day kind of thing, but it's but he's just kind of there, then suddenly he pops up and it doesn't actually do that. Well, what is it? That's for a later date, I guess. But yeah, I do find it's one of the slightly more under kind of baked elements of the film, not necessarily in a bad way. I don't mind it, but, and as I say, I adore the film, but it is one aspect that I'm surprised they don't make more of.
Well, I think that it's there as a red herring.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that, I guess so. That it's mentioned every so often in order for us to say to ourselves, okay, we gotta be on the lookout. One of these guys is a cop. He's gonna jump someone. He's gonna do something. You know, is it the woman? Is it this guy? Is it, you know, trying to make us try and anticipate something that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I guess it helps. It's a nice guessing game, as you say, to figure out who it is, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's the main idea here. Mm. Because in the end, we find out that it's pretty much inconsequential.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that does make sense of using it, later on, having the character, I mean, the character is the one, spoiler alert, who's going to shoot Mr. Brown.
Mm.
You know, so he does have something urgent that he's there for.
Yeah.
So I do like that aspect of it. I think it works. And then Garber says to Rico, he goes, "Rico, you want to make yourself useful? Get personnel and tell them to get together a list of all the motormen discharged for cause during the past 5 to 10 years." He goes, "Well, what are you looking for?" He goes, "Somebody down there knows how to drive a train. You don't pick that up watching Sesame Street. Tell them you want it today." So, again, the way that Garber's doing the stuff on the fly is just great. You know, he's trying to think, okay, how do I move forward from here? What's going on? You know, right now we're waiting for the money, we're waiting for Blue. So let's be proactive about things also. And let's try and find out, you know, who is the motorman. And the truth is it's very good detective work from any way you look at it, because, you know, in a normal heist, you just say, okay, who are the usual suspects, but not because of any particular specialty that one of them might have or something like that. But here it's basically, okay, in order to do this, you know, let's use the example that, you know, if it was a plane hijack, There are so many people that know how to fly a plane that it's not inconceivable to have one of your characters know how to fly a plane. Driving a train is not the same because people...
Yeah, especially a subway, very specific, yeah.
That's right. You know, it's not as if that's something that someone trains as a hobby to do.
No.
You know,
nothing. A spare train lying around to have a quick go in.
That's right. Exactly. So we've seen him before, but what do you think the name Rico is? Have any idea?
What do you mean?
What is it short for? What is it? What type of origin could it be?
Ricardo, I guess it's got a bit of a Latin American kind of thing going on. I don't know if it's short for Ricardo, maybe. I don't know.
That is one of the possibilities. If you're looking about it from a Spanish perspective, so it could be either Federico or Ricardo.
Oh, yeah.
And the Italian version is Enrico.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
It also could be a nickname or a last name or something like that. You know, actually, here we know it's not a last name, but. And I actually found a list of a lot of people named Rico. I've never heard of any of them. I don't think I've ever heard the name besides this movie.
Oh, really? I always thought it was fairly common. It always makes me, is it? I'm trying to think what it is. Isn't this some kind of law or some kind of anti-drugs
we'll
thing?
There.
That's
we'll
why I was,
there.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm
That's
definitely good.
What do you think of? Yes, I, right. And so it's also, like I said, it's also a last name, not just the first name. There are fictional characters that are named Rico. In the Barry Manilow song Copacabana, there is a character named Rico. Rico is the nickname of the title character in the movie Little Caesar, because his name is Caesar Enrico Rico Vandelli. In Starship Troopers, you have a character named John Rico.
Yeah.
And then you also have Rico Suave, who is a character on Hannah Montana. The series Madagascar, one of the penguins is named Rico. In the TV show Miami Vice, Tubbs' real name is Ricardo Tubbs. So yeah, we have a whole bunch of them. You know, unfortunately, on this list, they don't mention Rico Petroni.
No, I guess for me, it does feel like I think it feels like a quite a common name from kind of film noir and kind of crime movies from kind of the 30s, 40s, and 50s. It kind of, I think it's more common in those.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That's fair. That makes sense. So, Rico is also a whole bunch of other things. There's a company called Rico International, which manufactures mouthpieces and woodwind accessories and stuff like that.
Yes, I have. I think it's another reason I recognize. I do actually have a Rico reed for my saxophone.
There you go. There is a military manufacturer known as Reeves Instrument Corporation, which is known as Rico. Okay, and then you have Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, which is a U.S. law that targets organized crime, you know, about the fact that, you know, people are doing things together to form a conspiracy and stuff like that. You know, I'm not going to get into the whole legal aspects of it because I'm not a lawyer and I don't even pretend to be one.
It does come up a lot there, Rico, that law.
Yes.
In a lot of gangster shows and movies and things like that. I think The Sopranos, they mentioned a few times.
Well, you get in real life also.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And then he mentions also that you don't pick up driving a train on Sesame Street.
Yeah, I was going to bring up that.
Okay. So feel free.
Well, I think for me, I was just surprised. I was just thinking, when did Sesame Street come out? I was thinking, because this is actually like 1974. I always pictured Sesame Street at the beginning in 1970, so I thought it'd be quite young. But it was 69 when I looked it up, so it is fairly young, but not that young, I guess. So I wasn't sure how ingrained it'd be in popular culture, but obviously it must have been to get referenced like this.
Correct. So yeah, it Sesame Street debuted in 1969. It is an American educational children's television series that combines live action, sketch comedy, animation, and puppetry. It utilized a lot of Jim Henson's Muppets with things that they were doing in there, in the educational way that they were trying to explain things, I guess, to kids. And yeah, so yeah, that's why you see a whole bunch of Muppets on there also.
Yeah, I used to watch it when I was quite a bit when I was a kid. It did come to the UK.
Right.
Yeah, it's been the early mornings.
Right. Do you have any idea how they came up with the name Sesame Street for it?
No idea.
So it's connected to the phrase "Open Sesame." In order for it to give the idea and the feel to the viewers that this is a place where exciting things will happen.
Very nice.
Yeah. It's changed so many times to which channel it was on and stuff like that.
Really?
It actually last month in September it started airing on Netflix. You know, the original songs, the original shows, because it's still going strong
yeah,
all these years. It was ranked 27 on TV Guide's 50th greatest TV shows of all time. They won a Peabody Award in 2009, and it was ranked the show number 30 on the list of the 60 best TV series by TV Guide in 2013. So the one where it was 27 was in 2002. So just a decade later, it dropped three slots. It has won over 200 Emmy Awards, which is more than any other TV series.
It must be one of the longest running as well. It's been going on forever. I mean, I guess some soap operas have been going on longer, maybe, but
it's certainly a long while.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there. Right. And so, you know, we were just talking about the fact that that Garber tells him to make sure that you get it today. You know, it's something that we need. And then the shot changes. And, you know, we once again get to see people counting money, doing it in a very, very rapidly fast way. So, again, and the music's back right away. You know, as you mentioned earlier this week, the editing is great because of the way they do it. You know, because of the way they separate, like, the music and stuff like that. Like, when they change the scene, it abruptly will stop, stuff like that. Now, one of the things I've been paying attention to as this
he's starting to pile up the bundle, so you can see they're getting there. Yeah, yeah, they're starting to actually get somewhere with the money counting by those things.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to back up a few seconds. One of the things that I've been paying attention to through the you know, up until this point is the clock, and you know, when you go into the final shot before they leave the command center, you can see the clock and you see that it says it's 3 o'clock.
Okay.
So again, they're doing this really well because again, the, you know, they have until 3:13 to take care of that. So, you know, it's great the way they do that. And then, as I said, you see people counting the money, a whole bunch of shots, a whole bunch of, you know, people just stacking up the stacks of money with rubber bands and stuff like that. And then the shot changes, and we're back on the outside of the subway car, and then we're quickly on the inside of the subway car.
Mm-hmm.
And they give us a shot of five of the passengers. And I never noticed this before, but of those five passengers, you do see the cop.
Okay.
Which we were just reminded of, 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
So I
Oh,
like the way they do that,
yeah. And a hippie guy.
And then we see that Mr. Gray has taken the muzzle of his gun and has tried to put it into the hooker's brassiere, and she quickly moves it out of the way. And then we see that Mr. Blue notices what's going on, and he comes closer and he goes, "Mr. Gray, can I have a word with you?" Gray just turns to him, "Sure, sure, sure." He turns to her and says, "Don't go away, sweetheart." And then Blue says to him, "Will you stop messing around with the girl, Mr. Gray?" He goes, "What are you talking about? She's a 20-buck trick or hooker." She gets very offended and goes, "Who's a 20-buck a trick hooker?" Blue goes, "Leave her alone." And then she says, "Who are you to go around calling people 20 bucket trick hookers?" And then Gray looks at both of them and very confidently says, "Don't worry, I can do this job and hump that broad at the same time without missing a stroke." She gets up and goes, "Listen, you little prick, 20 bucks wouldn't buy you a goddamn kiss." And we see that Blue is starting to get a little bit upset with the way that Gray has been acting. If it was me, I would have been upset a lot longer, a while back, when he shot Kaz. That would have been, to me, the tipping point where, okay, we got to watch out for this guy because he's going to be totally unpredictable in whatever is going to be happening. But I do like this little dialogue debate between, between Blue, Gray, and the hooker. The whole thing. So it's done well. And we see Blue starting to get a little upset at Gray because of the way Gray is talking back to him. And doesn't look like he's going to be very predictable here, even when he gives him an order. That type of thing.
You see Gray doing a bit of an unusual gesture, like a bit of a, I guess it's some kind of offensive, like, gesture, like rubbing under his chin. I'm not quite sure. It's not one I know very well. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's an Italian American kind of thing. You kind of get some stuff like that in the kind of gangster shows and things. But it looks a bit different from what I've seen. I didn't quite.
It is an Italian. I've seen it also. It's like an Italian gesture. I think it basically means screw you.
Yeah. Kind of get the gist of that, but yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's the I think that's what they're trying to show us here from this.
One thing I noticed in these subway scenes, they're very dark. I can remember seeing, I can't remember what they said about it. I think there's something about some of the special features about that. It's it keeps it natural though. Like you sometimes see films where they're set somewhere dimly lit or set there somewhere at night, and they're not actually that dark. They just kind of turn it blue, or they just kind of have kind of just one light and blasting from one side, but this is actually quite dim.
Yeah.
Because obviously they've not got many lights on in the
because they've turned off the electricity,
the
haven't they?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, there's some kind of light, emergency lighting on, whatever it is, but
right.
Yeah.
So again, you asked. So the hand gesture of flicking from the chin primarily means "I don't care" or "whatever" in many parts of the world, including Italy and Belgium. However, the meaning varies geographically. In some areas, like in Belgium, Italy, and Tunisia, it can be a disrespectful way to tell someone to get lost, similar to giving them the middle finger. In contrast, in parts of Italy, it can also mean no. In France, it signifies boredom. Yeah, I don't think that's what they're trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
It basically conveys a sense of indifference, which fits Mr. Gray perfectly, because that is what he's doing here.
Yeah.
He's definitely fighting back the his urges of just shooting Mr. Blue and taking his share. I think he realizes that he needs them more than they need him, basically.
Yeah.
But I like this minute. I think it's really solid the way that they have this little lovers quarrel
back and forth. Yeah.
Exactly. So, did you have anything else to talk about with this particular minute?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, excellent. So, every Wednesday we have a segment called Hijack Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five movies featuring related to some sort of hijack.
Okay, cool. On my top five, there's quite a few to choose from on this. I'm gonna go with number five. I've gone with Captain Phillips. That's the where Tom Hanks is captain of a massive ship that gets hijacked. That's a really effective film, very intense. Is it by Paul Greengrass? Is it, I think? Really tense. It's got a really powerful ending, I remember as well. It's been a little while since I've seen it. When it kind of, well, I don't want to spoil the film, but it's a powerful ending. That's in there. And then kind of something a bit more ludicrous is my number four is Con Air. I know we one of our friends has done a whole podcast about this, another minute by minute one. And Con Air is a lot of fun. It's very, very, very silly, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, Jay and Mark did a great job with it, and
Yeah,
they're now
absolutely.
going over it all again.
And then next of all, I'm gonna go with a documentary, and that is Bus 174. It's absolute fantastic documentary, incredibly tense. And it kind of digs deep into kind of the some of the possible reasons behind the hijacking, socio-political kind of reasons behind it. It's a fantastic film. It's been a little while since I've seen it to give too many details, but it's one that's well worth digging out if you can find it.
What
And then,
in what country did that was that bus taken over?
I'm trying to remember. It's somewhere in South America. Apologies for, I want to say Brazil, but I
So you're
might
telling me it's
be
another one
wrong.
of your foreign language films?
Absolutely.
No.
But it's one that is, it's as I say, it's a documentary, but it plays out like a film. Like, it's really tense. It's in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. It's absolutely fantastic because there was kind of a media frenzy once it got took over. So there's loads of cameras watching this whole thing pan out. This guy who's he's hijacked a bus. Absolutely. If it's I don't know if it's on any streaming services or anything these days, but I remember what it came out in the early 2000s, I think, and 2002, and it absolutely blew me away. So yeah, that's definitely one to check out if you can.
Oh, wow.
And then number two is back to Paul Greengrass, I think, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, and that's United 93, which is set on the set where it's all set around September 11th. And it's about the plane that eventually will what that was it's the one that is it the one that was it's the one that was downed, wasn't it, that didn't actually get
Right.
to its
It's the one
target.
that didn't reach its target. It crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
And it's
Apparently, it was supposed to be on its way to Washington for the White House maybe or something like that. We don't know exactly.
But
Capitol of the World or something.
it's an absolutely incredible film. It's so tense, so intense. Like, it came out, it wasn't that long after the kind of the actual incident.
Came out
When it
five
went,
years later.
was it really? It felt like less, but still, it's still not that long. And so I was a bit dubious about it, thinking, oh, really, do you want to see a dramatization of this so soon? But it's so powerful. It's an absolutely stunning film. But then my number one is The Taking of Pelham 123, just because I love it. I've shoved that in all these lists because, as I say, I've only seen it twice, but it's both times I've been just I just can't fault it, really. I love it. So yeah, that's my number one.
Okay, that is definitely fair. That is a very, very good list. I like it. Now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So we will spin the wheel once again for David, and see what comes up. Let's spin that wheel. And around it goes, and where it's gonna stop. So the original came out in 1968, and they remake in 1999, and there is actually a new remake that is currently in production. A bank employee that tries to figure out a way of pulling off a multi-million dollar heist.
Oh, interesting.
The remake deals with art as opposed to making a heist. Making a bank heist.
Yeah. Oh, and now you mentioned that, I'm thinking, oh, I can't remember what it is. There's some vague. I can't think. Nothing's jumping out at me. Struggling with this one.
Okay, the remake is with Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, the Tom. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Thomas Crown Affair. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Right. And the original is Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
So, Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway. All right.
That's, yeah, there's another one coming out. Cool.
Yeah, with Michael B. Jordan. It's definitely going to be interesting. All right. So why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me at blueprintreview.co.uk.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So until tomorrow.
Gesundheit.